Yeah, Gyodo. I love Gyodo. It's like, I don't know what the analogy is. It's that doll in the corner that nobody else likes, but I love. Where it's an acquired taste, to be sure. I know not everybody loves it. One person even called it Gyodon't. But we have to work on it more. I think that's one thing we have to do. Yeah, we have to work on it more. We should do it many times a day, and it would get better. And we have to get our voices together. We have to get our voices together. Same note, if possible. Got to work a little on that. And with some energy, some good energy, and then you can glide through it. Focus on your feet, on your belly, on your breath. Really feel each word come out, and the space in between the words. The word and the space in between the words. I've done a lot of practice with that. Just noticing the silence, not the words. Lots to do in Gyodo. Now that it's over, I can tell you, I do wonder sometimes about Gyodo. even Genko, she likes everything. She likes everything about Zen. She's not sure about Gyodo. And in the past, Joni, you'll remember this. In the past, the Gyodo was not done syncopated like that. It was just kanji like that. It wasn't broken up. And then the Roshi said, oh no, you gotta have the space in between. So we did it that way. But I went to North Carolina Zen Center to lead a retreat there about 2 years ago, and they hadn't gotten the memo. The memo was passed 20 years ago, but they didn't get it. And so I think I even said, like, okay, we're going to do it equal sound and silence. Didn't work at all. They just went right through there, just right through the silence, no silence. And there was a guy in there who had a gorgeous voice, and he was singing it. Mm-hmm. And it was the most beautiful Gyodo I've ever heard. Mm-hmm. I wish I had recorded it. Mm-hmm. And he was doing these overtones, and then somebody else would do it, and it fit harmonies, and it sounded like shape note singing. There I was in the Appalachians. You know, it was just beautiful. It was really beautiful. So it made me think, you know, we probably should experiment with Gyodo. gave me that feeling that we could try something. Now it's done for this retreat, but on our own time we could try something and see if we can come up with experiment. But for now we're stuck with Gyodo, and one of the things about Gyodo that I appreciate, even though it may seem intellectual, is just that it represents, you see, this equality between sound and silence, the equality that is that we're looking for in our lives, according to Buddhism, that we're giving equal measure to sound, to ourself, our speaking self, and silence, our silent self, and those two go back and forth effortlessly. There's another form that also kind of has to do with self and no self in the Zendo, and that's left and right. The right in Zen represents yourself, your dominant hand, and left represents your no self. And so we always start out on our left foot when we do Gyodo, or when the Jikijutsu starts Kinhin, always on the left foot. We go around this mat to the left. Many other left things, the more you get into ceremony. Robes, fold left over right. Even our hands, left hand on top here too. So it's that. And the symbolism is that in the Zendo, that's what is on top. That's what we're emphasizing, is that no self aspect of ourselves. Out there in the world, it's a little different matter. But here, we're learning that aspect. And so, through the form, but whether it's the form or the Dharma, this interplay between self and no self is recognized as important in Buddhism. We've been sitting here for a couple of days now, getting to know what it's like to drop the dust, you know, sweep dust off the dust of our lives and just be here. Getting to know what it's like to drop ourself. Even if we do it very imperfectly, still we get little glimmers of what that no self is like. Little tastes. And that's a lot. Even a little taste means that you know what it's like. You know what it's like. You know that the self doesn't have to lead all the time, doesn't have to be in control. So, So we've been doing this for a little bit, and I'd like to ask you to see if you can't notice this interplay between self and no self. Notice your thinking, of course, and notice the gap in between thoughts. Notice what happens when you start to get a little bit quieter and the thoughts get less dense. Notice that there's a little bit of space there. Notice when you go out for a kinhin, when you're getting your shoes on, maybe there's no need to think. Notice that. Notice that moment of no self. Moment after moment, there we have these a chance that we don't have in regular everyday life to, not just when sitting on the cushion, but throughout the day, to notice no self coming, and then self coming back up. That's okay. It's bound to, and then no self coming back. And in general, of course, in our general everyday lives, at least in mine, self is the backdrop of everything. And no self happens once in a while. In a retreat like this, there can be a little more evenness. And even possibly at some point that you might get the feeling that no self is really the background and that self drops into that. That no self is the default. Anyhow, while you're sitting, while you're walking, while you're eating, while you're working. You know, Samu is a good practice for watching this interplay, at least it is for me. You're given an assignment, you think a little bit about what to do, how to gather your supplies, and then you just do it. You just clean, you just wipe the window. Give that a chance. Give no self a chance to take the lead then. Self doesn't have to lead. Like, feel self taking the lead. That can help. and then feel no self taking the lead and allow it to take the lead. Self has been driving for so long, it hardly knows anything else to do. It's nervous about giving up the lead. So in a space like this, you can experiment and let self know it's okay. You can give up. The car doesn't end up in the ditch. So see if you can't give over the lead. A kind of effortless back and forth between self and no self is a hope I have for my life. I feel it more than I used to. I'd like to feel it even more. No self for self is a useful and helpful ally to be able to, at a moment's notice, drop yourself and let no self take the lead. For no self, everything's okay. Everything's okay. Any situation is okay. Sometimes if I'm going into a difficult situation, you know, walking into a room that I know is going to be a difficult meeting or something awkward, right? A place where I don't know anybody. I'll just pause for a moment, and the feeling I have is I let no self take the lead. So let no self walk into that. Open, and let's see. So, and then not only is no self a kind of ally, but this interplay between the two affects yourself. Like I said this morning, affects the way in which the kleshas work. It loosens them up. It helps us in many ways. So we've been at this for a couple of days. Our practice energy, maybe it's chi. Our practice energy grows over time. I'm not a chi expert, but I do know something about a retreat like this and about the practice energy that gets built. Whether you know it or not, wherever it's coming from, that practice energy builds, and I bet you can feel it. So let's use it. Let's use it, not dissipate it, especially on this last day, this last evening now, and this last day. Rather than reverting back to the norm or getting back into thinking about your troubles, let's really use that energy to focus and to see if we can't find a deeper level of quiet, see if we can't really soak ourselves in that aspect of ourselves that we call no self.